AI is becoming more prevalent in society. Many people are using it for medical and psychological help. Today on Ask Dr. Gill, I want to talk about the challenges with doing that in the general sense, not necessarily in particular products, but the challenges of using AI in terms of medical and counseling assistance. So stay tuned. Hello and welcome to Ask Dr. Gill. I am your host, Dr. Gill Winkleman. And today on the podcast, I want to talk about how people are using AI to help with medical questions. This comes up because of a situation that happened with me with a patient recently. And they had basically taken some data and run it through AI, and it had created a report. And I looked at it and I thought, this isn't right. Like the conclusions aren't right. And so the reason I am talking about this is I think that this is really important for people to understand in terms of what tools can and cannot do. Now, I should give you a little bit of my background. I am not only a physician. Before I became a clinician, I had been a clinician in the psychological field, in psychology. And then I left that before I went to medical school. And in between, I had done computer programming and I was a software architect. And I had actually experimented with very early tools in artificial intelligence. I mean, it was way before the computing power was capable of doing what we have today. And it's like I had actually worked when I was in medical school. I had written several programs to help with decision trees in terms of diagnostics. And they were actually really good. But what's interesting is, I'm uncertain if AI can figure this out even today, is oftentimes you can have multiple issues happening and the system will assume that it's one issue. And so it looks for that, you know, that one connecting underlying issue, and that there may not be one. And so this is one of the things about AI. I think AI can be useful in terms of helping people understand sort of a framework around what is going on. But bear in mind, and I'm going to get into this, a lot of the information that AI has is wrong. And years ago, I had a research advisor who used to say garbage in, garbage out, meaning if your initial data is incorrect, all of your premises and conclusions from that data will be wrong. And so AI is only as good as the inputs it is given. And the inputs it is taking, some of them are absolutely correct and some of them are absolutely wrong. And it's important to understand that. And as a quick example, I was playing with this early on, and I said, so tell me what the consequences of overdose of B6 is. And it said, well, pantothenic acid, which isn't B6, it's B5. B6 is pyridoxine hydrochloride. So that's just one example, and that's just what I picked up as a professional, and I don't delve deeply into it. But I use that as an example so that you understand that not all the information you're getting is actually right. And so it doesn't necessarily replace something. Here's part of it is AI is really good at giving the illusion of authority. It feels reliable, right? But the reality, and our nervous systems love that, by the way. Our nervous systems want that surety in things. And a lot of times, particularly in medicine, things aren't that cut and dry. The other thing about AI that I think is interesting in light of some of the of the other podcasts I've done recently is that there's a shadow element to this, which is that you are, in effect, if you listen to AI about situations, you are, in effect, outsourcing your own intuition. And as an example, one of my friends was analyzing text conversations that she was having with a potential person that she could date. And she knew this was not the right person, like intuitively. She knew it. But she kept going back to that to see if there was something that she could find that might override that intuition. I think AI, from that perspective, is definitely giving that illusion of authority. But it's more important than that. It's like we use it in terms of outsourcing the authority and also experience. So now one of the things I think that's important to bring up with this is, why do people go to the computer to ask these questions instead of to their healthcare professional? And I think that part of the problem is the medical system is very broken. Part of it is that the costs are astronomical right now. I'm recording this in January of 2026. There's hopefully going to be an extension of the healthcare, you know, health insurance subsidies, at least in the interim, until we can figure out how to fix the problem. But I was just reading the headline about lots of Americans have let their health insurance lapse because of the costs are too high. And so this becomes a problem, right? It means that you're using AI in part because you don't have access to clinicians, or maybe you live in an area where you don't have good people that are there that can answer the questions and sort of help you through this. The other thing about AI is there's not a personal contact. There's not a personal context. In other words, going into a physician, getting a physical exam, having someone watch your body language, which you can even do on video, right? You can kind of see how someone's responding. AI doesn't necessarily have all of the complexities of your particular situation, the trauma you've been through, your physical, you know, your history psychologically and medically. And oftentimes, and I don't recommend you put all of that into something like ChatGPT. There's actually been some articles about not sharing all this information with AI anyway because of copyright issues and what they own versus what is known and how that information might be sold. As a quick aside, many people who use 23andMe are concerned now because now 23andMe may be selling its data to stay afloat. And so the question is who owns that data? You know, do you own the data or does 23andMe, and can they actually sell it? And what does it mean if they do sell it, that some other company that you don't even know about owns data as to what your DNA is? These are really important ethical questions. But even beyond that, what you might tell, if assuming it's completely safe and confidential and all that other stuff, what you may tell AI, if AI doesn't ask follow-on questions, may not be what's important to understand what's going on in your system. And that's something that's really key about this, is that good clinicians are trained in what are good follow-on questions to understand what's going on. And I think that this is where sort of, you know, in terms of my background in terms of having a background in counseling psychology is really important, because I see it more, not just from the physical, I see it from the energetic, from the psychological. And AI will not do that anytime soon, is my guess. So, and it won't have that understanding. So, you know, and some of my patients say, well, I can use it for lab results. Well, lab values, and I talk about this in my big Eliminate Anxiety course, lab values are not correct. in terms of the ranges. And this is actually a big problem in the medical field because a lot of clinicians don't know that the ranges are wrong. And I talk about zinc. The zinc ranges are completely wrong. They're way wider than they should be. Thyroid, in terms of thyroid stimulating hormone, TSH, the range is 0.5 to 5 officially. That's what the lab governing body has defined it as. If you talk to an endocrinologist that is training, in fact, the board of clinical endocrinologists tried to get this changed because it should be closer to 1 to 2, 1.5 to 2.5, somewhere in there. And so someone with a 4 will be evaluated by most general practitioners as normal, but they're actually hypothyroid. They're actually at the beginnings of that. And the thyroid needs to be looked at that point. So that's something to consider as well. So I'm going to take a quick break. And on the other side, I'm going to talk about the issues that show up with not having human-to-human interactions. So stay tuned. Okay. Hello and welcome back to Ask Dr. Gill. I am your host, Dr. Gill Winkleman. And before we jump back into issues with AI, I want to just remind people that if you have any questions or comments, please feel free to email me at info@askdrgill.com, A-S-K-D-R-G-I-L. And I'm happy to answer the questions. And if you have a topic that you want to have covered, please let me know. And by the way, if you really like the show, make sure you hit like down below and give it a thumbs up, whatever it is. Those are really helpful. I'm really trying to get the word out in terms of my offering of the podcast, because I think there's good value here. At least I hope there is. So. What is, first off, before we jump in, what is AI good for? And I think sometimes AI, what it can be good for is translating medical jargon. I will say that. So oftentimes people go to a physician and the physician, like we're trained in it's basically another language. And we are speaking it after 4 years of medical school and practicing for a long time, very fluently. And one of the things I like to think I am good at is explaining these things, these complicated ideas, like, for example, methylation. If you've listened to any of my podcasts on methylation, I think I explain it in a way that people understand. But it obviously, you know, maybe you don't get it the way that I'm explaining it. And I think AI can be very, very helpful for that. And although, again, there are sometimes things in there that may not be correct, and you would have no idea unless you had training, right? So that's part of it. The other thing that I think AI can be really, really useful for is helping you figure out what it is you need to ask your clinician. And what's interesting is that I've had patients come to me and say, hey, I would like to have these lab tests that are done. And they're not necessarily lab tests I normally run. And so they'll tell me, I want to run this and here's why. Well, that is where AI can be useful. And usually I'm in agreement with them when they say that. And so I say, yeah, let's run those. Let's see what those come back with. And sometimes I'll say, you know, I hear where you're going with that, but I would say, let's run these other tests first. Because one, they're cheaper for you. And two, if these are not abnormal, there's no reason to run these other tests. Or if they're not normal, there's no reason to run these other tests. I found that, by the way, with pyral disorder. Oftentimes, we get false negatives if zinc is low. If zinc is low in the blood, you don't really need to run the pyral test, in my opinion, because you already know the person's low zinc and you need to treat that. Now, if you treat that and they're not getting better, then you might run the pyral test, right? Assuming the symptoms fit still. So let's talk about the problem with AI in terms of human to human interaction. And I think that, and there's a whole other side to this in terms of robots that we can get into, but I'll save that for another podcast. There's something about a human to human interaction, even if it's over video, that creates empathy, it creates co-regulation, it creates nonverbal attunement. And I think that the clinical experience that someone like me has and other clinicians with trauma, with nervous system patterns, with traumatic brain injury experience, all of those things create subtle cues that I as a clinician have learned to pick up on that AI has no idea how to do. And I think that, you know, for one thing, as far as I know, AI can't see you, right? So it's not going to be able to learn how to attune to you and your experience because it's not even getting that input. So that's one thing. The other thing is that when someone has a lot of clinical experience, there's a sixth sense that shows up that you know something's off. You don't necessarily know what it is, right? But you know something's off. And I'll go back to where I started at the beginning, where when I was creating, the app I was creating that I'm talking about is you would input a lab panel and it would spit out what's going on, you know, why ranges are out of range. And what I was trying to do is get to the unification of, well, if cholesterol is high and glucose is high and, you know, this is low and this is low, then it's at the liver. And if not, then it's diabetes or whatever it is. The details aren't important. Here's the problem. You could have, for example, diabetes and high cholesterol. And they might be related and they might be unrelated. And there's no way for AI to figure that out because we don't have that information in terms of the data. Now, what's interesting is since then, there's a new test. Well, you do fasting insulin with glucose, and there's a calculation. You can do something called HOMA, HOMA-IR. And there's a calculation in there, and I'm starting to run this with patients because both glucose and fasting insulin and even A1C can be normal, but you are still on the beginning of metabolic disease. So that's interesting. Now, AI, you don't need AI to do that. Because the calculators exist now. That didn't exist when I was doing this. So, but I could work with a patient and look at the numbers back, you know, at the time that I was doing this and know something's off, but not necessarily know what it is, right? And so oftentimes the goal of the intelligence is to find a unifying principle, and there isn't always one. And so that's important to recognize. The other thing is that there's ethical considerations. I, as a clinician, carry accountability ethically. AI does not. And as far as I know, none of the systems right now have that kind of ethical consideration. It definitely has some boundaries around it, like things it will and won't say to patients. But I think that, I think what it doesn't have is some of the other things that clinicians have. You know, for example, in terms of selling products, you know, or prescribing medications, we have ethical considerations on that. AI doesn't have that. And so I think that, you know, AI can be useful in terms of gathering information to have the conversation intelligently with your doctor. And that's where I actually appreciate that with some of my clients, you know, where they've said, hey, I was doing some research and I found out this. And I can correct them, or really correct the AI when it's incorrect, right? And I'll say that's not correct. I mean, I do this a lot, and you probably have heard me do this on this podcast, because going back to methylation, there's a lot of wrong information about methylation. You know, for example, that everyone with MTHFR needs methylfolate. That's just wrong. That's just wrong. And I can prove it clinically it's wrong, because I have patients who call me who have been told to take methylfolate, and they said, I feel much worse. What do I do? And so there's that. And I would also say that in terms of healing, it requires presence. Sometimes it requires a relationship. It requires accountability. And I think that those are important aspects that you don't get from an inanimate object. And AI is basically an inanimate object. So that's what I have for you today. And I just want to remind people about the workshops and the courses that I'm offering. You can check those out on my website, askdrgill.com, askdrgill.com. I'm actually going to be revamping the offerings here shortly. And you can also get on my mailing list in terms of, you know, all of the things that I do, because I send out reminders about blog posts. I send out reminders about workshops and course offerings. And you're also free to schedule. Like, you can do that on the website as well and reach out and find out more about my practice. So thanks so much for joining me. And I really enjoyed talking to you about this. And I hope this was helpful. And I wish you the best. Take care.